I want to invite you to turn in your Bible to Exodus chapter 19. Exodus 19, starting in verse 3, where we will be just in a second. First of all, ladies, if you are in a dating relationship with a gentleman or if you are married, do you like to receive flowers? Ladies, by show of hands, who likes to receive flowers? Okay, great. It's wonderful when that special guy brings home those flowers. You feel so special and loved. Now imagine this. You get the flowers. They're so beautiful. You say, oh, thank you so much. I love the flowers. They're so beautiful. And this is his response. Oh, well, I thought you needed them. Does that change a little bit how you feel now about the flowers? Yeah, well, I felt obligated because, you know, you like flowers. And so I just thought, well, she needs flowers. I should get her some. Yeah? It's different. What about this? I love the flowers. They're beautiful. Oh, well, I'm glad because I really didn't want you to be mad at me. Right? Now, guys, confessionally, can we admit we've bought many flowers because she was mad at us, right? It's a peace offering. Please don't be mad at me anymore. You're right, I'm wrong, you're smart, I'm not intelligent, you are beautiful, I am not good looking or attractive, right? We do these things. What about this? If you get the flowers and you say, oh, they're so beautiful, and he says, oh, well, yeah, you know, I was on my way home and a guy just walked right up to me at the stoplight and they were practically giving them away for free. They were so cheap and convenient, I didn't have to go out of my way at all to get you the flowers. Do you like them? And you're thinking, no, I don't like them. I don't like the flowers. There are many good reasons to give flowers, to receive flowers, but really at the end of it, I think most women enjoy receiving flowers because it communicates to them. It's a show of devotion and love. It's a sign that this other person desires to be in deeper relationship with you and that they were thinking about you, right? That's the reason that you want to receive flowers. That's the reason that you want to receive them in joy, because the other person wants to be in a relationship with you. And I think the same thing is true of God. God wants to be in relationship with us, with all of us, but God doesn't want our relationship or our love or our devotion solely out of reasons that we're afraid of him and what might happen if we don't. God desires to be in relationship with us, but he wants us to be in relationship because that's what we choose. God never forces anybody to be in relationship with him. And he calls us and he invites us. Imagine if we were to say, God, I'm going to follow you because I know that sometimes it's hard being God. It's just discouraging. And I know you just really need the encouragement. So I thought you needed it. I thought you needed my devotion, God. And God said, I've made everything that is. I don't need anything. But I want you. And imagine if you said, well, you know, it's really not all that trouble. It's kind of just something that I do. It's not really that big of a deal, God, to be in relationship with you. Just something I do. God, imagine how that feels. Imagine how God hears that. And I don't want to portray God as if God's feelings or emotions are fragile and we have to tiptoe around. This is the God of the universe who made us, who created us to be in relationship with him and with each other and to be people of love and compassion in the world and to help God nurture the world to its full potential. And yet God will not demand our love and allegiance. He only offers relationship. And we have a choice. And it's a choice that the people of Israel faced as well. If we're continuing on in the story that we're reading through, we come to this moment. God has rescued the people from slavery in Egypt and delivered them from the hand of the oppressor. And they have come out. They have followed Moses into the desert. And now here they arrive at the mountain of Sinai, where God will give them a law. God will give them a covenant to live by. The God who desires the salvation and reconciliation of all things sets before Israel a way of life that will shape them into their role as the ones who are called out, a peculiar people of justice and mercy who will be a light to the nations. God starts with relationship. Let's read in Exodus chapter 19, starting in verse 3. Then Moses went up to God. This is on the mountain of the Lord on Mount Sinai. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, "This is what you are to say to the descendants of Jacob and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen that what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites." So God says, the reason that I'm doing this, the reason that I've rescued you, and now the reason that I'm giving you these commands, and if you read, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of things. It starts with 10 big ones, and which Jesus tells us later, really summarized down to two important things: love God and love your neighbor. And then there's these 10 commandments, and then there's all the rest of it. There's all these regulations about how to do sacrifices and how to worship God and all of these things. And the point of all of it is not because God just gets his kicks from just making lists of rules for people to follow. It's because God is telling them, you are to be a holy nation. You are to be a kingdom of priests in the world. The world, God says, I want the world to see my love and my goodness for all human beings through you. And the way for you to do that, the way for you to stand out in the world from the nations and the peoples around you, is to live in this peculiar way. And so God starts listing out these things. Do this and don't do this and live this way. And when this happens, this is how you should behave. And when you have this conflict in your community, this is how you resolve it. And when you come to approach the Lord, these are the things that you ought to do to know that God is with you and that his forgiveness extends to you. These are the ways, these are the things that I am asking you to do. But before God gets to any of that, in Exodus chapter 20, God says this, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. That's where God begins. If you read then in the next verse, in verse 3, it says, you shall have no other gods before me. And so if you ask someone to list the Ten Commandments, where are they going to start? Commandment number one, you shall have no gods before me. That's not commandment number one. Commandment number one starts in verse 2. Commandment number one does not start with, here's the rules, don't have any other gods before me, I've got to be first. That's not where it begins. Commandment number one begins with, this is who I am. I am the Lord your God who rescued you, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I am the one who has delivered you. I am the one who wants to be in relationship with you. I am the one who has rescued you from death. And because of that relationship, I want to be the first thing always in your life. And then he goes through the commands and he gets all the way through. But I think it's important for us to be reminded that that's where God always begins. So if you grew up in an experience of religion that was just all about following the letter of the law and it was stifling to you and crushed the people around you and you found it to be completely unrealistic to live in that way and you felt like it made God out to be this just real litigious monster who's walking around with a clipboard and a hammer just to thump people when they don't get it right, then this is good news that God never gives commandments and rules until after he has expressed desire to be in relationship. And the rules and the commandments are always for the purpose of us living set apart lives so that God can be revealed to the people around us. And this is what happens. They hear the commands. So Moses goes back and summons the elders of the people and sets before them all the words the Lord had commanded him to speak, and the people all responded together. This is their response to God saying, will you be in this relationship with me? And they say, we will do everything the Lord has said. So Moses brought their answer back to the Lord. And on the morning of the third day, we're skipping ahead to 16, there was a thunder and lightning with a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, and everyone in the camp trembled. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. And God gives them the commands. Mount Sinai, right before that, was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently as the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder. Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered him. And then in chapter 20, after God gives them the Ten Commands, when the people saw the thunder and the lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, "Speak to us yourself and we will listen, but do not have God speak to us or we will die." God says, I want to be in relationship with you, and here's the covenant we're going to have together. And then God shows up in a way that maybe they had not seen before. And maybe we have a difficult time imagining it, but whatever it was terrifying to them. And then God speaks directly to them and says, "These are the commands." And the people had said, "You know, yeah, we relationship, God, that sounds great. I'm all in." And then they see what it's going to entail, and they recognize the gravity of being in a relationship with the God of the universe. They catch a glimpse. It's like if you've ever been in the ocean, maybe snorkeling, and you swim out to the edge of the shelf, the continental shelf, and you all of a sudden the water gets cold and dark, and you recognize, you have this innate sense of, it's a combination of fear and wonder. But for most of us, leaning toward fear. The people see what God has to offer. God says, "I want to be in relationship with you. This is what it's going to look like." And what do? They stand at a distance. You notice before this that Moses wasn't going to be the mediator for the people. God was going to speak to them directly, and they get just enough a glimpse of who God is and how mighty and awesome God is, and their response is, "We don't want direct access to God. We want Moses to mediate for us. We're going to stand over here at a distance. We don't want all of that." How many of you like ice cream? Okay, that's a hard right turn. How many scoops of ice cream is enough? 2, 4, 10, right? 100. How about this? Suppose we filled up the state of Louisiana 100 feet tall all the way across with ice cream. Is that too much ice cream? Some of you say no. That's too much ice cream. Now, don't get me wrong. I like ice cream, but not that much. I mean, a whole carton of Blue Bell, I've never done it. It could be done, though. Okay, I'm willing to try, but 2 cartons, 4 cartons, 100 cartons, at some point, too much of a good thing is just that. It's too much of a good thing. And this is what the Israelites experience. They say, "God, we will do whatever you ask. We want to be in relationship with you." And then God says, "Okay, this is who I am. This is what it's going to look like." And they say, "That's too much ice cream. That is too much." And they stand at a distance. And they will not approach God. And they ask for a mediator. We often read these texts and we think, well, if I had been there, I would have. Why did they want a mediator? I mean, how incredible would that be to have unmediated access to God, to hear God's voice? How many of us would long to hear God's voice? If you've been some of you are in places right now where you would just even long for a faint whisper of knowing that God was in the room. We would love to hear the audible voice of God just to know that he's with us in what we're going through. We would ache. Some of us have stayed awake at night in tears and just in silence in the darkness, calling out, crying out for God to answer us, to show us some sort of sign that he's there. And we say, if I had only lived in the Bible times when it seemed like those things happen more often, and here we have an example, and then we realize that through the cross of Jesus Christ, God has offered us mediated access through Christ, who was God with us, and therefore unmediated access to his presence and his spirit and his love. And yet, for many of us, we stand at a distance from God. And we say, that's too much. I want a little bit of God, but not all of it. There's several reasons that we do this. The first reason that we stand at a distance from God is rebellion. That's not a popular word, but that's the word that I chose because that's the word that's true for me. I don't want the fullness of God because I have a rebellious heart. I want to do what I want to do. And there are things that I don't want God messing with. The next reason that we stand at a distance is fear. I'm afraid of what will happen if I give all of my heart and all of my life and all of my mind and all of my time and all of my actions and all of my money and all of my resources and talents and gifts. If I turn all of that over to God, I am afraid of what would happen. I am afraid that God would call me to do something that is more than, if I'm being honest, than I really want to do. Another reason we stand at a distance is comfort. If you invite me over for dinner and I walk in and the first thing I start doing is rearranging your furniture, you're not going to invite me over very often. You say, what do you do? This is my furniture. Don't move my furniture. And we say the same thing to God. We say, God, I'd like for you to come be a guest in my home. I just don't want you to mess with any of the furniture. I don't want you to move anything. Don't touch anything. Wear some white gloves. I don't want your fingerprints on anything. I just come in and eat a meal with me. I want to feel good about that. Certainly don't go look down the hall in the closet. There's bodies in there, right? Don't look under the rug where I've swept everything. We like our comfort. We like to be in control, and we do not approach God because we know that if we fully approach God with an open heart and with open hands, with everything in our life, that he will call us to do things that we do not want to do right now. And I want to remind us again of the idea that I've been bringing forward every week, this idea of openness, that when we are open and hospitable, we are embracing that posture that says, God, I think I really do want all of it. Show me how to give and to love and to be open to what you're doing in the world. But we stand at a distance because of our comfort. We stand at a distance because of our shame. All of us, every single one of us, from the most successful human being at the very top all the way down to the person in the most dire of circumstances, every single one of us, while intellectually knowing that we are created in God's image and loved, every single one of us lives with a shame, and the voice of shame in our heart says something like, yeah, but because of what you've done, you are unlovable. And that shame drives our lives in various ways, but we all carry it. And it's one of the things that causes us to stand at a distance from God. We are ashamed. This is what Isaiah felt in Isaiah chapter 6 when he sees the glory of the Lord in the temple and he cries, he hears the angels crying out, holy, 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 the whole earth is full of the glory of God. And Isaiah says, woe to me, I am undone, for I am a man of unclean lips and I live among a people of unclean lips, and yet my eyes have seen the King. We're ashamed. And so we stand at a distance. And we say, God, I'd like a little bit. I'd like Sunday from 10 to 11, and I'll serve in some ministries too, and I'll show up, and I'll go to a fundraiser from time to time, and I'll try to help my neighbors. But God, if you're talking about me coming and sitting at your table and being fully known and completely exposed and completely transparent and offering you all that I am, I'm just not sure that that's what I want to sign up for. We might should have gotten Will baptized before the service. This is what you're signing up for, Will. To give your whole life to God. But there are reasons to approach. Just a few. One is love. Because the God of the universe is irreversibly, unashamedly in love with you. And God doesn't just love you, he likes you. Do you believe that? We've got to say that because, oh yeah, I love my enemies. Oh yeah, I love everybody. I don't hate anybody. There's a lot of people I really don't like. God not only loves you, he likes you. He thinks you're fantastic. He thinks you're the most incredible person. You are loved. And God desires a relationship with all of us. And he made us so that we could choose, and he desperately hopes and invites us to choose to approach him and to not stand at a distance. Another reason to approach is that you're already known. You standing apart from God and saying, I don't know if I want to be all in, that all that does is allows us to continue the charade that there are things that we can keep from God, that we can hide from God, and we can't. He sees, he knows it all. And now it's time to revert back to number one, and he still likes you. And number three is that his mercy and grace is greater than our sin. His love is greater than our brokenness. His mercy is greater than our despair. And so I love what Hebrews 4:13 says. Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom we must give an account. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith that we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weakness, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Confidence. The God of the heavens, the everlasting God, says to us in Jesus, as he said to the Israelites through Moses and through the covenant offer, that I want to be in relationship with you, and I want you to be part of this great story for the whole world to see my love. And so let us approach God's throne with confidence, his throne of grace, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. You may have other reasons why you don't approach that I didn't mention. That doesn't let us off the hook. And I want to challenge you today to answer that question in your heart. Why am I standing at a distance? And what would it look like for me to approach? We're going to sing a song, and after that, we're going to gather around the table of grace and mercy, where God invites us to approach and to be his and to belong to one another. So I want to invite us to stand for this song, and then we'll gather around the table together. Let's stand and sing.